All right, me. What are we fighting over today?
We've got some Cardinals tickets on Sunday, August 25th. The Cardinals wrap up their series with the Rockies. That day, 30,000 fans ages 16 and up will take home a replica of the 1940. Oh, hold on. Wait. Scratch that.
Oh,
wait.
Oh,
hold on.
Hot Rod, Red 7.
That's the
Red
old
seven.
One. That's the old one. Friday, August 23rd. The Cardinals. Friday. The Cardinals host the Rockies, same team. That night, 30,000 fans, 16 and up, will take home the mesh pullover Cardinals jersey. They'll add that to the wardrobe courtesy of Bayer. You can get your August 23rd tickets now at cardinals.com/promotions.
Thanks, me. Good audible.
I caught it, though.
Way to have the other one ready.
I'm good.
Did you have
man.
Them both in line right there?
Kind of, yeah.
All
sure.
Right, all right. I saw these blue pullovers the other day. They're pretty sweet. It's a nice-looking jersey. You're going to like these. You're going to dig these. Let's see if Rick can get to go to this game. Rick, what's going on, man? How are we doing today?
We're about to find out.
Oh, good. I like that. So are you confident going into this, or it's just to your last point, we'll see what happens?
We'll see what happens.
All right, man. That's how I live life. Whatever today brings, it is, you know?
That's every day.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. As long as we live through it, we're going to be good to go. All right, here we go. Question number one. In 1985, Don Dankinger ruined the Cardinals' season in Game 6 of the World Series. Which batter did Dankinger call safe at first base in that game? I'm sure there were a lot of them. We're asking for a specific one. Was it Hal McCray, George Orta, or Lonnie Smith?
Boy, the first thing that came to my mind was Hal McCray, so I'm going to go with that.
Question number two. On this date, 40 years ago, Lou Brock recorded his 300th career hit. How many players have recorded 3,000th career hit?
Omaha.
That's a Ronjup.
Repeat that one more time, please.
Well, I'm sorry everybody else messed it up for you.
Way to go, Ronj.
That was my fault. Here we go.
Worst.
On this date, 40 years ago, Lou Brock recorded his 3,000th career hit. How many players have recorded 3,000 hits in a Cardinals uniform?
So, as a Cardinal.
As a Cardinal.
Like, not 2,500 and, you know...
500 somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3,000 hits as a Cardinal. Is it 1, 2, or 3?
Let's see. Stan Musial, Lou Brock. I want to say it's it. 2.
Question number 3, Rick. Last year, Patrick Mahomes, future Hall of Famer, had 26.1 fantasy points per game. Since 2001, there's only one quarterback with a better fantasy season than Mahomes had last year. Who was it? Was it Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, or Michael Vick?
Michael Vick.
And question number 4, Meat here, and I don't know why he does it, but he pokes fun a lot at the KC population.
Oh, it's me, right?
As of 2017, the state with the highest obesity rate in America was at 38.1%. Which state was it? Is it Louisiana, Kentucky, or West Virginia?
Oh, God. I was going to guess Wisconsin.
Or Wisconsin. Louisiana, Kentucky, West Virginia.
Got to be Louisiana.
All right, let's bring in Randy.
Wisconsin didn't even crack the top 20.
Rick, how you feeling?
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing.
A little odd that Wisconsin's not in the top 20. That's how I'm feeling.
I mean, cheese and brats, that's protein, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you calling my bluff, Rick? Is that what you're doing here? Are you
calling
me a liar?
I believe you.
I'm with Rick on this. I'm surprised.
Hey,
I thought for sure they would be up there.
Here's a question for you before we call anybody's bluff. Has Meat ever been wrong on a fight question?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. Whoa! Come on. Thanks for always listening, Rick.
Yeah.
Randy, say hi to Rick.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Who obviously listens to the show quite
a
bit.
My man.
Oh, I don't even listen to that often.
Dude, Rick,
with us, man. Rick is burying you right now. I love it.
All right, here we go. Randy, question number one. In 1985, Don Dankinger, he ruined the Cardinals season in Game 6 of the World Series. Which batter did he call safe at first in that game?
Normally, you'd think that it was Jorge Horta, but it was actually George Horta.
So weird. Every time I read it, I'm like, Jorge. Not a George. Jay, yeah, Jay's Jay here. Yeah.
Hip, hip, George. Question number two.
Yes, sir.
On this date, 40 years ago, Lou Brock recorded his 3,000th career hit. Mm-hmm. How many players have recorded 3,000 hits while wearing a Cardinals uniform?
So they had to achieve their 3,000th. They had to get 3,000 hits with the Cardinals.
Yes.
Yes.
Or is it...
Not reached 3,000.
They reached 3,000.
They have 3,000 hits. Yes, all 3,000 have to have been with the team.
Well, you've got Stan Musial. Then you've got Stan Musial. And then you've got Stan Musial.
We're up to three.
So three.
So I will go with... Stan Musial being the one.
Question number three, Randy. Last year, future Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes, he had 26.1 fantasy points per game. Since 2001, there's only been one quarterback with a better fantasy season than Mahomes had last year. Who was it?
Since 2001?
2001.
I'm thinking it might be Manning when he had the 55 touchdowns. But do I want to do that, or do I want to say it was Cam Newton? Or did Aaron Rodgers? I think I'll go with that. He had to have some running touchdowns, and I don't think Manning had a bunch of running touchdowns. No, I'm going to – I'll go with Peyton Manning in that 55 touchdown season.
And question number four, Randy. Meat, I don't know why he does it again, but he pokes fun at the Kansas City population quite a bit. I mean, you hear him do it all the time.
He fits right in.
Just talking about how sturdy they are.
Finally somewhere.
As of 2017, Randy, the state with the highest obesity rate in America was at 38.1%. What state was it as of 2017?
I don't think it was Kansas or Missouri. It seems like it might have been a southern state. I will use the lifeline here.
All right, Randy, you have got Louisiana, Kentucky, West Virginia.
Ah, okay, so I would have said Mississippi.
Or Mississippi.
Yeah, so I'm glad that I took the lifeline here.
Rick would have taken Wisconsin. That's what he thought.
Wisconsin has the highest... per capita of bars. Bars are like Walgreens
so
in Wisconsin.
So you think about all the dairy, all the bars, all the beer. How in the world are they not in this conversation?
That's a great question.
But Pepto sells well there.
I think I'm going to go with West Virginia.
We've got a winner.
Who's got the jokes now, Rick?
Oh, Rick, he got you. Randy, you got three. Rick, I can't tell you how many you got right because, you know. You didn't. It is George Orta who was called safe at first base when obviously he was safe in the 85 World Series in Game 6. There's only one Cardinal player to have 3,000 hits in a Cardinal uniform. It is Stan the Man. Lou Brock had, 27-13? Yeah, a lot of them. A lot of them. Not quite there, though. It is Aaron Rodgers, Randy. You were on the right track. The rushing touchdowns count for a ton when you're talking about fantasy points. But he had 26.5 points per game, fantasy points in 2011. And it is the same state, I believe, that crushed all the hot dogs when we did the National Hot Dog Day of who eats the most.
Oh, really?
West Virginia representing yet again, hammering hot dogs and a 38.1 obesity rate, which is the highest in the country. Rick, thanks for playing, man. Try again.
All right. Thanks a lot.
2011. I've got Aaron Rodgers on my fantasy team. Last game of the season, the Packers. Remember this?
Flynn, right?
Yep. I picked up Matt Flynn on the during the Rams pregame show. I picked up Matt Flynn, and he threw for 6 touchdowns and won me a fantasy championship.
And made him millions.
Yeah, he sure did.
How about that?
That's when he signed with the Seahawks right after that, didn't he?
Yeah, huge money. Yeah.
Jeez, good for him.
You were thinking it might have been Mississippi. They are number two with a 37.3 obesity rate. So you're pretty close.
Do you have the like most fit? Like is it California,
Colorado?
Oh yeah, a lot of outdoor stuff
so
to do.
Colorado, DC, Hawaii, California, Utah, Montana.
Okay.
New York.
Right.
I'm surprised by DC.
I'm surprised by New York.
Missouri is 17th highest and Illinois is 27th.
Right in the middle of the pack.
Kansas is below Missouri, by the way. Just want to point that out.
Kansas is below Missouri.
Yep.
Just barely, though.
Thank you.
4:14 in the Fast Lane. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. You know, analytics has taken over Major League Baseball, and it's changed the careers of a lot of coaches and players. We're going to talk about that next with Hall of Fame manager and one of our favorites, Brad's former skipper, Tony La Russa, is next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. With Cardinal World Series champ Brad Thompson and Chris Ronji, I'm Randy Carricker, and Brad's World Championship manager, Tony La Russa, is with us now on the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line on 101 ESPN. Skipper, always great to have you with us. How you doing today?
Well, I just got a few minutes. I'm here in Cleveland, and the Red Sox are batting practice pretty quick, so I'll do what I can.
Well, Tony, we appreciate you taking the time. We've spent a lot of time just over the last couple of years, really, just talking about analytics in the game of baseball. And certainly any information that you can get is a tool. And I know that you and your staff over the years, you were ahead of the game when it came to stuff like that and utilizing all the information that you had. But, Skipper, since 2011, since the last team you managed, have you seen the job of major league manager? Has it changed a lot in the last almost decade now?
Well, I think it depends on the organization. I think where an organization values a manager and a coach in terms of understanding how dynamic each game is and investing them the ability to adjust based on what they see, then, you know, that's pretty much the same. But there are a whole bunch of organizations now that are trying to script things out and are really tying the hands of managers and coaches as to what they can do during the game, and they're relying way too much on percentages.
Well, part of what you're talking about is front offices who have a lot of say in what the lineup looks like on a daily basis. How common is it now that you've got a front office, a general manager, who says this is the way I want the lineup to work out?
Well, I think that, you know, the transition now is where they're getting more and more authority and playing that thing. I always speak carefully because you know, it was mentioned earlier, you know, our coaching staff, we relied and we survived, and in some enough cases thrived because we were information junkies. But what's happening is that, you know, the way that's best explained to me is, you know, if you have a percentage that makes sense, and some of it does, you know, when you try to establish where you're going to defend, you know, where you're going to place the defense, maybe, you know, the percentage of pitches that you might want a guy to throw in terms of breaking balls and fastball and so forth, they're very useful. But it really breaks down when you get into the human element, and that's what happens when you play a game. Those percentages are really not worth very much. And if you rely on them too much, they actually make it harder for you to win.
Tony, if we covered you six games a week, there were four times a week during the course of those 16 years where you would say, trust your gut. And it seems like ultimately what we're talking about is we're taking that out of it. We're taking the ability to trust your gut out of a manager's hands.
Well, it's, you know, the only time you do that, if you don't think the manager has a gut that's worth listening to, and then you go get another manager. But, you know, the trust your gut thing, you know, it's one of those cliches, but what is the gut? The gut is the combination of your experiences. You know, it's what your head says. It's what your mind and your heart have combined as far as the emotion of the moment. You know, when you have enough experiences that you say, you know, this is likely to be a high-scoring or low-scoring game, you know, that's not just something you pull out of your gut. It's something that connects your mind, your heart, and your gut. So I think it's, you know, it's so simple to me, and I think there's going to be there'll be a correction here in Major League Baseball, because in places where, you know, you're tying the guy's hands downstairs, the game has going to become less entertaining, and that's not what we're after. But I think it'll come back to where there's a balance where you take that very valuable information those formulas provide, but then again, you understand the dynamics of each and every game, and you have to have a coaching staff that can respond.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, talking about trusting the gut, or as you put it better, the experience that you have. So if with that knowledge of the gut kind of being experience and the things that you've done throughout your career and the things that you've seen, do you think it's a lot easier for a younger manager, and I'm not talking about young as far as age, but managing a major league ball club, do you think it's a lot easier for somebody to back up a decision after a game, so whether it's a bullpen thing or a switch that a manager end up making, do you think it's easier if they have data to back up a decision that they made?
Well, it may be easier for them to explain it.
Correct.
But that doesn't make it easier for them to make a good decision. And that's one of the problems, you know, when you hire managers that may were good players. And it's the fad now, so believe me, I applaud every young guy that gets a chance to manage. I didn't have a whole lot of experience when I managed, but I played a long time. And there is something, the ultimate decision being in your hand. And when you start making that final decision, I'm going to make this move with a pitching staff, or I'm going to play for a run or more, you acquire a certain experience that helps you avoid some of those mistakes. And the only way you can do that is trial and error. And the alternative is somebody say, well, you don't have that experience. We're going to give you all the situations. And here, just read this note, and this is what you do. That's even worse.
From your perspective, what is most useful about analytics? Because it must be working for a lot of teams because they're all using it in some capacity. So is there something that, even as a guy who managed long ago, could you take something from it that you think is really valuable?
Certainly, certainly. Like I said, I'm going to say one more time. The problem now is they're taking credit for everything, and they don't take blame for anything. You know what I mean? Everything can be... You know, the fact that you have a pitcher that can't go past two times the lineup. Well, we knew that if you had a starting pitcher that had two pitches, he wasn't the third time through, the hitter's going to deduct one of them. So that's why you have a starting pitcher that you try to get three. So I think the numbers are very good, you know, for like identifying the number of times a ball is hit in a certain situation for your defensive positioning. And then during the game, if you're watching and you see the guy's bat's a little slow, or the pitch you have a little faster, you know, then you've got to make the adjustments. So I do think it helps you identify issues that you want to correct. It may say, look, you know, Adam Wainwright's spin rate is 30. Well, heck, I'm going to go scout. Everybody has a 30 spin rate curveball. So I think it may open eyes about guys that you might want to scout and maybe draft. So it has definite uses. But you just can't take away the stuff that happens during the game and make it some kind of percentage.
As you said so eloquently over the years, men, not machines, and ultimately it's got to come down to being players. Tony, before you head out to BP, I want to ask you, I got the sense that when you talked about that correction, the game does need to have an infusion of excitement. What would that look like to you, that correction that you will hopefully take place?
Well, let me ask you something, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
If I ask you a question, okay, I want you to describe. I want you to describe the most entertaining game that you would see, and then you would lay it out, and then you say, "I'm gonna look at the game that's played quite often now. Is that as entertaining?" The answer is no. Strikeouts more than hits. You know, not seeing the beauty of the defensive player, not seeing the base run properly. You know, not seeing not just devoted to home runs, but also the little ball that's so important in close games where you have good pitching. So to me, it's just, you know, what is entertaining, and it's the total game. It's not what we have now, which is feast or famine.
Do you think, because this is the way I look at it, that baseball would go a long way towards solving some of these things we're talking about if they would just call the strike zone that's in the book from the armpits to the knee?
No, I don't think it's that simple. I think what's happened is that there's so much conversation about, elevating swing plane, swing angle, exit speed, and guys are swinging from their butts with three strikes and striking out. Sometimes they hit home runs, and, you know, you're hitting more home runs than ever because of the ball. There's something going on with the ball, maybe the seams or something. No, I think it has much to do with, you know, now everybody's trying to pitch up, but if you can't pitch up with location and some extra stuff, those balls up get hit in the air for doubles, triples, home runs. So I think it's much more specific about how the thing could be improved.
Tony, we hope your team can get on a little bit of a run here. You know all about great late season runs, and you have a good group. Get them going.
Well, I'm going to be cheering as hard as I can. Thanks a lot, fellas.
All right, Tony, thank you very much. That is the former Cardinal manager and now a special assistant to Dave Dombrowski with the Boston Red Sox, Tony La Russa, who's in Cleveland and getting out there for BP tonight. We'll talk a little bit more and react to what Tony had to say next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Well, one of the reasons that we had Tony on to talk about how he would approach an analytics-driven organization is because yesterday the Cardinals fired their 66-year-old assistant hitting coach, Mark Badaska, and one of the reasons given to Derek Gould was that there were philosophical differences between he and the Cardinals' chief hitting instructor, Jeff Albert, who's 28 years Badaska's juniors. Clearly different generations and different generations of baseball. And you could hear in Tony's voice the frustration with the analytics movement.
Yeah, it's – and I don't even think it, – I don't know. He just – Tony, a lot like many of us, who and I, when he was saying things that he enjoys watching in the ball game, that's what I enjoy. I love watching great defense, and I love watching action. I feel like most of you listening probably like the same things. While we're all entertained by the home run, when they're few and far between, the gap that is left, which is basically called baseball now, isn't as entertaining as it once was. It's not saying the game's not good. I still love it. I still love baseball, but it could be more entertaining. And certainly there is the frustration. He talked about there will be a
correction.
Yeah, about how it gets back to it. My question is, though, how? Like, how does this correct itself? Because all we're getting is more and more information. Unless the information comes out, it's like, oh, yeah, instead of home runs, it's a lot like basketball. I don't think that we're ever going to see the day where the big man is as important as the three-point shot. The numbers, you know, bear it out. It's worth more, and your percentage is worth taking these shots. I feel the same way about it as I do with all of the replay. We've opened Pandora's box at this point. There's no going backwards with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I wonder if you're right about that. I
hope I'm not, by the way.
Yeah, and I kind of lean toward you being right on it. I just when players find out how they can make money, and this, because to me it goes back to when you're a much, much younger amateur player and what you're good at doing and what gets you noticed by big league scouts, what gets you noticed by colleges, is being able to do the stuff we're talking about, and then being able to separate yourself from your fellow college player or your fellow high school player to get yourself noticed. It is that power. So I don't know if there's going to be much of a correction. You might just have a handful of special guys who are gap-to-gap doubles hitters and hit for high average who wind up making it to the big leagues just because of that. But I don't know if people change their approach to get to that point.
Nobody has built a bigger ballpark in terms of its length to the outfield, in terms of dimensions.
Right.
Everybody has built smaller to facilitate home runs. We have a juiced ball to facilitate home runs. With the lack of steroids, we're still going to see more home runs in baseball than have ever been hit before. And that's clearly what baseball wants. It won't change until baseball decides that they want it to change.
Well, and the thing is, Ronge was describing a player that handles the bat well, that can drive the ball to all fields, that is scrappy, whatever adjectives you want to use. Until that guy gets a multi-million dollar contract,
right,
Nothing is going to change. Guys are going to keep doing the things that are going to make them richer and richer. It's home runs. It's not worrying about strikeouts. And we did get a text to the Hot Shots text line, 65780, and two in a row, actually. One's from the 314 says no more shifts. The next one asks, would eliminating the shift be enough to adjust the percentages to entice hitting in play? I go to the other side. The shift should be giving good hitters an advantage to be able to, you're going to put three defenders
way
over here?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to shoot a single over here. The shift could correct itself. And I still understand the reason guys continue to hit into the shift, because doubles and home runs, it's slugging, all right? So if you do what you're trying to do, you're eliminating the shift on your own. But you really could spread things out if you could just spread the ball around. If you knew how to handle the bat. And that guy, the guy that can handle the bat, by the way, there's not too many of them in the game. And that guy doesn't get shifted a lot. They play him straight up.
Right.
That's what you'd want.
Right. But again, everybody wants that power, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Because like we said, that's what's going to get you noticed, is being able to hit a home run. That will get you noticed by Major League scouts. So I wonder if maybe the correction comes, or the very next correction comes, from Major League Baseball saying, all right, we are going to start to monitor the shift, and you got to have two infielders on the left side of second and two infielders on the right side of second base. We're not doing this extreme stuff where three or four of your infielders are all on the right side of the second base bag. I don't think maybe we get to that point, but I don't see what else. I don't see how else they can regulate it.
No. Here's something that I find interesting. I don't know if it means anything, but I personally find it interesting. When you talk about the value of getting the bat on the ball, if the playoffs started today, none of the top 10 strikeout teams in baseball would make the playoffs. Of the 10 teams with the fewest strikeouts in Major League Baseball, seven would make the playoffs. The Cardinals, the Dodgers, the Nationals, the Indians, the Twins, the A's, and the Astros. All of those teams are in the bottom 10 in strikeouts. So maybe there is some sort of a correlation between success in actually getting your bat on the ball and avoiding strikeouts.
I would think so, and that was one of the main reasons that the Cardinals wanted to bring Jeff Albert in and be in the fold, because that's exactly what he did in Houston. Was it was bat to ball. They cut down their strikeouts significantly. Their big main players preached about how great he was. And I do think that when it comes to changing an approach, and who knows how wholesale that approach is changing for a guy, and every guy is different, you're changing it for an entire organization too. So potentially that ends up taking time. So I'm not shocked to see, again, the news yesterday of Mark Budaska being let go. It's just to simplify it, new school versus old school is what it seemed like. And maybe they got to the point where those two couldn't go together.
The Cardinals are in Kansas City tonight. Our buddy Rex Hudler is an analyst for Royals TV. And Rex joins us next on 101 ESPN. Thompson, Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker. We head to the Brown and Crouppen celebrity line, and our friend Rex the Wonder Dog Hudler is with us as the Cardinals get ready to take on the Royals. And Rex does a fantastic job of analysis on Royals telecasts. How are you, sir?
Randy, when I hear your voice, it brings back a lot of great memories of my Cardinal days as a player. And now we get to share the game of baseball with the folks over the TV, over the radio, wherever we can share baseball. It's always good.
Hey, before we get rolling here, I would assume that if nobody else calls Glenn Sparkman Sparky, you do.
Oh, believe it. Sparky boy. You know what? He's had four or five really nice outings. One, Randy, when he threw a complete game shutout. He definitely provides spark. I mean, he's a young kid that's really – he's strong. He's an attack guy with his fastball. He comes right at you. And if he's going to beat the Cardinals tonight, he's got to throw quality strikes. He can't just go right at these guys down the middle because they'll get him. You got to stay on the edges. But he's going to challenge guys. He's not afraid. I love this kid's guts.
Rex, it's always fun when the Cardinals and Royals end up playing each other. Now, I was a member of the Royals just for a minute in 2010, and I got sent down. It was shocking. It happened every year for me. But before the Cardinals came to town, but I always remember playing there as a member of the Cardinals and seeing all the Reds, seeing all the Cardinal fans, and I knew, you know, it pumped me up as a member of the Cardinals. But on the flip side, being there, how do the players feel about that when Cardinal fans take over Kauffman?
They love it. Hey, man, it's fantastic. The baseball fans are baseball fans.
There you go.
That's how you look at it. Now, some folks might get worked up on the color, but look, I'm colorblind when it comes to baseball. You know, I can just tell you, from being a player, you don't really care who's coming to town, you know, what color their uniform is, where they're from. In order to succeed to get a paycheck the next year, you're going to have to do the same thing you do against any other team, and that's look for a ball, square it up, catch the thing, and throw it accurately. So that's what a player concerns himself with. Now, he loves the energy. He loves the atmosphere. And if they're anything like me, I really love the paying customer. And I wasn't that great a player. Now, when I was coming off the field lots of times, the fan would yell, "Yo, Hudler, you suck." And I would stop in my track instead of ignoring him, which is easy to do. I would stop, turn, and look at the fan and make sure that everybody heard me. And I said, "Yes, I know. Keep playing me. What am I supposed to do? You know, come on. Hey, have a nice day." I mean, so really, you love the colors.
Oh, I love watching people when they go after players and the players respond in a funny way. Who was the guy who was playing in the outfield and somebody was jawing at him and he put his glove behind his back and he was pretending like his butt was talking? Do you remember what I'm talking about? Like this video went.
Absolutely.
I want to say it was a Padre maybe.
You know,
I don't remember.
There's been a lot of characters. I can tell you when I wore the birds on the chest, when we went to that place called Wrigley Field, and Red Shandy started letting me play the outfield, and I'm out there, and you hear more in the outfield than you do when you're an infielder. You don't have time to hear or anything when you're in the infield. That ball's moving over 100 miles an hour, and you got to communicate with your guys where you're going. You can't hear a fan, but you're in the outfield. You hear everyone. So for the first five innings, I'm in right field. They're ragging me to death about having a dog's name. You know, Rex is a dog's name. Hey. And so finally in the sixth inning, when a fan goes, hey, when you ride in the car, do you hold your head out the window? That's when I cracked up and lost it. So I started scratching my ribs. I started scratching my side, and I shook my back leg like a dog would when you're scratching them. And 1,000 people roared in laughter.
That's
and I'll
really
never forget that.
That's
how
really
much fun that was to mess with the people.
That's really funny. And I was Tony Gwynn was the guy I was thinking of, Tony Gwynn Jr. So, all right, I'm wondering on the flip side of what you're talking about, having people in the crowd, even if it's not your home fans, because I worked for several years with the White Sox, and they struggle with attendance in a pretty big way. And players and coaches would constantly say things. If you ask them about it, they would say, I wish people would come out to the ballpark. You know, they said it would affect them. Have you noticed the same sort of reaction from players in Kansas City when there aren't a ton of people in the crowd?
You know, it depends on your team. You know, I think a team full of veterans that have a little bit more experience in here, that might concern them some. But these young players that we're having, that we're developing, and most everybody except for Jorge Soler is a homegrown product here, and they're all young because we're trying to figure out who's going to be our next championship team and who's going to be a part of that. So they're more concerned with, you know, what their daily job is like. They don't have time to think about the crowd, and so that's how hard it is. Let's not forget how difficult the game is to play, especially when you're young and you haven't experienced it. You're going to take your lumps. You're going to eat your humble pie, and everybody gets a piece of pie. Some of them, if they don't digest the pie properly, they get the whole piece of the whole pie like I did in my career. But, you know, it's how you ingest it that will determine how good you'll become. So you have to continue to keep your focus and try to not worry about the other little things. But I tell you what, now that I'm on the other side, I'm looking forward to a packed house, hopefully, these next two games. All the red and all the blue we can squeeze in a real good plate ball game. 2.5 hour pitcher's duel.
There you go.
I'm thinking about. How about you guys?
No doubt. Rex Hudler is with us on 101 ESPN. Hey, Rex, I mentioned earlier I really like the top five in your order, and I don't really know anything about the bottom four. You mentioned the kids that are getting a chance, people like O'Hearn and Ortega and Valoria and Lopez. Who should we be looking for?
Ooh, if somewhere Mike Schilt doesn't put up four fingers and pass Jorge Soler, he's in trouble. Jorge Soler is a beast. He is everything that the Royals thought he would be when they gave up Wade Davis, who helped us go to a back-to-back World Series. So this guy, he's an animal. He spent a lot of time on the liquid metrics, which is what you can apply when you're out there between the lines. He's done his homework. He's studying pitchers. They're trying to change on him. They're trying to go to breaking balls because he kills fastballs, anything in the zone, to all fields for power. And so he's been a real, real spark here. The kid Hunter Dozier is the number one pick the Royals had several years ago that's finally come through to play at third base, play a little bit of right field. They're trying to find the spot for him in the future, but real strong. And, you know, Randy, you said you like our first five. I've talked to some of the pitching coaches around the league every day my job, and I ask them what they think, and they say, we don't like your first five. They are dangerous. You guys can beat us in a lot of ways. So what's good is that when you have some pieces to work with, they'll find out who's going to be in that bottom third, and eventually when that pitching is developed in the minors here in the next few years, then the Royals will become powerful once again in the league, and And Dayton Moore, the general manager, has the blueprint. He knows how to build the pin. Believe me, the Royals will come back and win.
Rex, I think a lot of just even if you're a casual baseball fan, you at the very least know who Whit Merrifield is, and he's having a monster year. He's been great. I know his name was rumored around quite a bit when it came to the trade deadline, and why not? Because he's one of the best players in the game. So you can look at his numbers and know that he's great. But I had the opportunity just the other day, I was watching a video, and it was a play ball initiative, you know, that Major League Baseball does, and it was featuring Whit, and it was just trying to get kids out there to play the game of baseball and basically saying, look, you don't need a baseball bat and a baseball, you can kind of play with whatever you've got. He just seems like a guy that gets it. Tell us about the guy that Whit is.
Well, he brings his lunch pail to the ballpark every day, like to Alex Gordon. Okay, these guys is what you call a blue collar worker. There's another term in baseball that's used, and that's called a baseball player. Okay, now you know, you have that in different sports too. He's a football player. He's a hockey player. You know, every sport has a guy like that. And so when you say that about a guy, that means he does everything, including loving on the fans and the extra things that to go with being a star. But I can tell you, being blessed to be in 21 years as a player myself, I got to meet a lot of people. And one of those was Paul Molitor, Hall of Famer. I texted Molly the other day. I said, Molly, do you mind if I compare Whit Merrifield, a young Whit, to a Paul Molitor? And Molly texted me right back and said, Hud, at this stage, he's played 500 games and he has great numbers. Yes, go ahead. I'd be honored if you would compare him to me. So really, before I drop a name on anybody or a label or a comparable, I always will call that person, especially if they're a Hall of Famer, like Molly or Ozzie Smith.
The Royals are in a pretty interesting division. We've been watching it throughout the season, and now you've got Cleveland that is on top after spending so much time behind where the Minnesota Twins were. Are you surprised now with the development here and Cleveland taking over?
Not at all, guys, because like I shared before, I got to play for a lot of great managers, Yogi, Billy, Earl, Whitey, Joe, Shane Deese. Terry Francona was my manager in Philly when he first started. But I'm not surprised, because a manager has a lot to do with the mental side of the game. And baseball, we all know, is mental. So the fact that Francona's there, that's number one. They have a leader who's been there and done a couple World Series and a couple of deep, a couple of important places there in Boston. But still, he has the players relaxed. There is no panic. And then they got off to a slow start. Every year they get off to a slow start. There's no panic from him. Therefore, your players respond to how your manager acts. Now, when you have starting pitching or you have a bullpen, there you go. The manager can do all he wants with the mental psyche of the player, but if you don't have the weapons on the mound, you're not going to win. Well, his bullpen has the best ERA. They're good. They're not like they used to be with some power, but they're still very competitive, and they have Brad Hand, who's closing games for them. Now, that's a big important, but you got Kluber coming back to join the Clevenger. Man, watching this guy pitch is amazing. Bieber, Plutko, some of these guys that have stepped up for them is amazing in the absence of Carrasco and Salazar. So there's your ticket. They just went to Minnesota. We know how Minnesota can hit homers, but look what they did. Their pitching can pitch under bats. That's how you win. So, man, I'm not surprised about Cleveland one bit. I won't be surprised when they win the Central either.
Rex Hudler, when the Royals were in town, threw out a first pitch, and I saw it, and you still have it. That arm is still there.
Randy, now I know that your tongue is in your cheek, because, look, I had my jacket on because I looked at a few of the pictures in the back room and in the green room, and there were some old-time players that came back and had coats on. I said, I'm going to wear my jacket. And I threw a sky ball, obviously a lot of gravity on my throw, and Shilty picked me. It was a short hop pick. He picked me. And he made it look like he caught it. So, and because I wanted Shilty to catch my pitch, either him or Willie McGee, and Willie wasn't in. So he comes out. I go, Shilty, I love you. You just picked me. And he signed my ball. And he said, no problem, Hud. I'm anything for an ex-Cardinal. And we know Shilty. We know him. And I can't wait the next couple of days to get some time with him, get in his office early, and talk about George Kissel. And talk about Kissel and how he used to work infielders and how I used to watch Ozzie Smith and work Oquendo and all them guys. That's baseball. So, fellas, look, it's a beautiful thing. And I will tell you, that bobblehead that they gave me, that was a huge, huge honor. They sent me a couple of boxes of them, and, man, I'm so proud of those things. I give them to anybody I know.
That's fantastic. Rex, you're the best. Thanks for taking the time with us. Have a great series with the Cardinals in town.
Randy, appreciate you letting me share with your great audience there. Love the Redbirds.
All right. Thank you, my man. That is the great Rex Hudler joining us on 101 ESPN. You know, at some point, the Orioles might want to stop pitching to Gleyber Torres. That's next before Take It or Leave It on 101 ESPN.